Hello, everyone. My name is Dane Doria, DC Cordova, and I'm the CEO and owner of the Accelerate Business Schools and the Money in You program. And we're so excited again to be bringing to you a social entrepreneur, a person that is really committed to the betterment of humanity and is also very involved in business and technology. As you know, yearly, we put on a global business school for entrepreneurs where we really focus on new technologies, on renewables, and making a contribution. So this beautiful guest that we have today, Jorge Yant, and he is a fellow Latino. His background is from Mexico, and he'll let us know a little bit more about himself. And so I just want to introduce you to him. I have to read it because it's a little bit comprehensive, and we cut it down as much as we could. So Jorge Yant is the President and Chief Executive Officer of Plexus Healthware Systems. Now, Plexus is the leading trusted software vendor in the global payer community. What that means is that they have systems that are provided to insurance companies, that which then work with hospitals and doctors and other entities in order to make sure that they get paid, but also there's integrity there, and it works for everyone, the organizations, and also for the customers. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So with nearly two decades of experience implementing and supporting international customers in over 15 countries, so he's definitely a global entrepreneur, Plexus provides international insurers, in and outbound travel insurers, national health plans, multinational insurers, and cost containment companies with the technology and services to modernize and grow in the business of healthcare. So he is in a very, very traditional business. So he is highly acclaimed as a leading industry innovator and a creative visionary. So Jorge Yant's unique leadership has guided Plexus Healthware Systems since its founding in 1996. Mr. Yant's expertise in developing key partnerships and his experience directing the design, development, and deployment of information technology systems for the healthcare industry have resulted in Plexus' continued growth in the U.S. and abroad. Based in the Pacific Northwest, Plexus is recognized as one of the nation's fastest growing healthcare technology companies. Mr. Yant is the founder of several successful technology businesses and a former CIO of one of the largest law firms in the country, Heller, Ehrman, White, and McAuliffe. Mm-hmm. So you are also an attorney?
No.
Okay, you just work in the system.
Just worked in the system, yes.
Wow. And so you have been a consultant with Price Waterhouse and a director of administration at UC Berkeley Law School. In other words, you have a very comprehensive business professional background.
I would say so, yes.
So you were appointed to the Oregon Health Policy Commission by Governor Ted Kulogonski in 2004 and has delivered talks and speeches to a wide range of executive businesses and health industry audiences. You hold a Master's of Science degree in Systems Management from the University of Southern California and a Bachelor's degree in Business Administration from the University of New Mexico.
That's correct.
And so we're going to talk about business first, and then we will move into the arena of where I had the opportunity to meet you. And I want to really thank you for having us in your beautiful home. If people could just see this, this is one of the most beautiful places on planet Earth. And I'm not just saying this. I had the opportunity to see this property because my friend, Joe Sugarman, used to own it, whom you bought it from. Mm-hmm. And it is one of those pieces of heaven right next on Maui, on the island of Maui on Hawaii. And also, really interesting, my beloved Christian Menzel used to live here with his family around 25, 28 years ago. So we have a lot of history here. And so I had an opportunity to meet you here in one of your beautiful spiritual courses that you provide for free to the community. But before we get to that, I know that you didn't grow up with a silver spoon in your mouth. So can you tell us a little bit about your background and how you ended up building one of the leading technology companies in your field?
How far back do I go?
From when you were born. I'm sure you'll make it nice and short and sweet, but yes, the audience will be interested.
Right, right. Well, so I was born in Mexico, raised there at age 13. My mom, my sister, and I moved up to the United States. And, you know, at the time, we definitely didn't have a silver spoon. We had nothing. My mom worked whatever job she needed to support us, to keep us going. I was born an American citizen because my father was an American citizen, so there was no problems coming into the United States. And then, you know, just found my way into this society and made it through high school and college, university, started getting professional jobs, and worked my way through all of it, paid my way through a mission boarding school in Albuquerque, New Mexico, several jobs and paid my way through the university. I was working full-time while I got my master's degree at USC. So always working, always.
That is an expensive school.
Yes. And actually, my tuition was covered by the Navy, which I was working for at the time.
Oh, so you have military background.
Well, I worked for the U.S. Navy for 7 years right out of college as a civilian.
Got it.
And that's where I got a lot of my early professional experience. And then... during that time I got my master's degree at USC, and then just continued to progress from government to education. I went to work for UC Berkeley and ended up running the law school at UC Berkeley, the administrative side of it, and then moved on to work for this large law firm downtown San Francisco, one of the largest law firms in the country. But we revamped the entire technology infrastructure. That was a great project. And then I pretty much started on my own. A few other little things here and there, but I founded a company.
Did you see a niche? Did you see a need that people really should be having the system? How did you decide to start a company?
Well, so... I decided actually to drop out of the rat race for a while and move to Ashland, Oregon, move my family up to this little town up in the mountains in Oregon. And I was doing consulting so where I could live anywhere. So I picked what I felt was the best place in the country to raise my family.
So you were a family man with how many children?
I had two kids. Okay. I was married and had two kids at the time. And really a lot of these decisions were, you know, what's best for my family,
yes,
what's best for my kids. How can I be the best dad possible? Not just the best executive, not just the best leader, but the best dad. That was really what was mostly most important to me in my life. So I dropped out of the corporate world. I was rising fast. I was climbing up the corporate ladder, and I dropped out and started just doing consulting. And one of my consulting engagements was with a healthcare company that retained me and my team to search for some new technology in the payer side. And we found a hole in the market that needed to be filled. And so with the expertise of this consulting company and our technology expertise, I raised some capital and built Plexus. And that started, I think we mentioned earlier, I think around 1996, 23 years ago.
Wow.
Yeah. And started out of my garage working, you know, on a little consulting practice, and got some capital, hired some programmers, and started just building the company little by little. And over time, it just kept, you know, growing and succeeding. And it was really about 10 years ago that I started stepping a little bit more out of the day-to-day role running that company. And I have a great team there that still run the day-to-day. I still get involved in meetings and board meetings and financials and so on. But primarily, I have a great team of people running the show, which frees me up to do other things. I am doing other types of ventures and projects that I don't know if I can talk to you about some of my other projects here. It's pretty exciting, actually. While, of course, I'm doing this new thing that you were talking about. So
yes, the Kapasana.
Kapasana.
Yeah, the courses that you offer for free.
Yeah.
In the most beautiful community. I mean, anybody can come here that really applies to come and do these beautiful courses.
Yeah.
But there were several things that you said that really interest me, and this is why we're going to have you as an instructor at our business school. And we know that we're lucky this year that we're going to get you live, mm-hmm, and you could get really busy, and then we would like to ask you to come in through Zoom because we love to have instructors like yourself. So how was it that you were able to build your company and be able to free yourself up? Because one of the biggest challenges that we have found, and I've been in this industry now of training entrepreneurs for 40 years, mm-hmm. and one of the biggest challenge for people is their succession plan. How do they leave their, how do they duplicate themselves? How do they leave their company to run even better without them? Can you just share a little bit about that with people that are entrepreneurs mm-hmm. and listening to this and maybe want to be free like you are?
Well, yeah, to begin with, the reason I started my own company, the reason I became an entrepreneur, other than I think that's just how I was wired in general, was for freedom. That was the mantra. That was the overriding factor, is to establish freedom for myself and to have something that would take care of my family and take care of me and free to run my life in any direction that I want to run it and do what I want to do. So all along, you know, in the early days, I did everything. I was in there, you know, with a plunger, fixing the toilets and driving up the road and making cold calls and doing whatever it took to build this company. But little by little, as the company started growing, I started finding the right people, finding the right team. It's all obviously all about the team. You get the right people, people that you trust their character, you trust their competence. You spend time with them, you get to know them well, you establish their rapport, you establish mutual trust, and then you just cut them loose, let them go more and more and more and more. And the more you are able to give them freedom to do their jobs the way they want to do them, the more you're freeing yourself up. And so that was it for me. That was the overarching thing in that venture, was finding freedom. Now I have other things going on that have other purposes, but that was really the purpose for this company.
So do you have a culture of where people can make mistakes? I mean, mm-hmm. usually people like yourself have set up what we teach in our Money and You program in our business school, which is to have a purpose for the company. Mm-hmm. Ours is to really uplift humanity's consciousness mm-hmm. through socially responsible businesses, which mm-hmm. that's one of you.
That's what it ended up being. It didn't start that way, but it ended up being that way. Yeah.
Yet usually they don't. It's like when we are learning more and more. And then we have a mission. Mm-hmm. One of our missions is the greening of the world. Another one for many years has been to transform educational mm-hmm. systems around the world and eradicate poverty and hunger. Mm-hmm. So what is one of the missions that you may have?
Well, okay. First of all, as it relates to Plexus, let's stay with Plexus. Obviously, our core mission as a company is to improve the healthcare delivery system. It's a big thing. It's a huge, very complex thing that is bankrupting the country and creating a lot of problems. And we offer a solution that helps people track information better, have more flexibility in how they design their plans and how they run their business. But more importantly than that, it was creating a business that itself, the business itself, was more revolutionary in how we conducted ourselves. A lot of those things are happening now, like with Google and Apple, where they're doing a lot of really fun things in the company. I was one of the early people doing that. I had a big game room in my company. I had a kombucha bar. I had a full-time massage therapist walking around taking care of people and massaging them at their desks. And I had a lot of health and wellness related activities. It was almost like working at a spa.
Wow.
And there's of course all the good business reasons for that, but really it was to create a place where I would want to go to work and a place where we could show that you can take really good care of your people, treat them extremely well, treat all your customers with absolute integrity. That was key, integrity in everything we do, and be successful. Yes. Not in spite of it, but because of it. So I'd say as far as Plexus, that was it. For me personally, it was about creating something that would give me the freedom to conduct my life any way I want.
Yes.
And it did result in that. And then in the business itself, is to create a business that was a little bit more revolutionary in how we handled ourselves and how we did everything, which allowed us to innovate better, which allowed us to be more successful, attracted more talented people, retained them. So,
They become really good, loyal employees and consultants and people that just don't want to leave because it's so wonderful to be there, right?
Yeah, I have people who have been working there for 20 years, 15 years, 10 years. You know, it's their life. And that is rare these days, especially in the U.S. where there's so much turnover. We have high employee loyalty and retention because we give them great benefits, we pay them well, we treat them well, we treat them like family. If somebody's having some family issue or some family problem, we give them whatever time they need to go take care of themselves. I had somebody come say, "You saved my life," because she was having a serious heart condition and we completely took care of her, took care of her family, flew her family out to where she was having the surgery, found her the very best doctors in the country. And this is just how you treat people as though they're your family.
Yes.
And you become a family. And you know, families have all kinds of things, as you know, but as a whole, we do very well together. I've put people through a lot of self-awareness training in the company, and accountability and communications, being accountable for your own experience, being self-reliant, which frees me up. So, yeah, all those things.
Wow. And so what are some of the other projects you're involved in that you can share with us?
Well, right now I run a lab here in Maui. Okay. I'm funding a lab and some scientists, and they're making inventions and doing things. And we just got 9 patents on a revolutionary valve that is going to revolutionize the valve industry. It's a $50 billion a year industry.
Wow.
We have just invented a valve that will never leak under any conditions.
Wow.
Which, you know, there's so many environmental problems through fugitive emissions and so many safety problems and deaths and, outrageous costs from valves leaking. 62% of fugitive emissions, which is basically toxic materials going out into the atmosphere, come from leaky valves. We've solved that problem. And so that's one of the things we're doing right now. We've presented at the International Valve Conference in Munich recently. We now have a contract with the U.S. Air Force where we're doing testing for them. We're going to put that in the Department of Defense. And so that's a fun project, one of the things I'm involved in. And
so you are actually solving, this is what our business school is about. Mm-hmm. It's about finding a problem and creating a solution and making it profitable.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what you do.
Yeah, and then I take the profits and I use them to do good in the world. I live very simply. I spend very little on myself. All the money I make, I put right back into doing good. All of it. I don't need very much.
So tell us.
I came from nothing, so I know how to live with nothing and how to be happy with that.
Yes.
So everything I make is how can I help? How can we raise consciousness? How can we make this place a better place to be?
So then about 10 years ago, you mm-hmm. started having this idea about creating a retreat that you would offer to communities. And was it to people that couldn't afford it or just mm-hmm. anyone that really wanted to learn? Can you tell us a little bit about how this beautiful Kipassana courses started and mm-hmm. and for people that want to look it up, it's kipassana.com. And we will make sure that you get that information too. But so tell us about that, because that is the most fascinating thing. And I feel like you're creating a whole paradigm shift mm-hmm. because I had a really hard time about a couple of years ago. We went to a yoga, we went to a big festival. And I don't know what it was, maybe because I grew up in the 70s, but I got really upset that people were charging $80 for these pants that I know that you can buy. And I know there's a whole conversation about Walmart and mm-hmm. how little and all the stuff that they do. But I knew that I could find those pens for a lot less. And then I started looking around, and here was this whole industry around yoga. And then later found out how, you know, there are a lot of people really upset. I was just I'm trying to remember the name of the country. What was the country that we went to? It was Thailand. And then there was a big, beautiful poster that said something about Buddha. Mm-hmm. mm-hmm. you know, not being a commercial mm-hmm. thing. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, it was right as you walked out mm-hmm. and how all of a sudden all these spiritual things have mm-hmm. began to be hijacked mm-hmm. and just people charging so much money for it. How can a young person mm-hmm. that wants to look that beautiful, mm-hmm. you know, afford to pay $70-$80 for a pair of yoga pants?
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you start creating this whole new young generation of people that begin to get hooked to having to pay for so much money, and they're being paid a minimum wage mm-hmm. of $12, mm-hmm. right? So all of a sudden I started seeing this discrepancy. Mm-hmm. And then shortly thereafter we met you mm-hmm. that was now giving, you know, what people really charge $5,000, $3,000, $8,000 mm-hmm. for a 10-day retreat where you provide everything, housing, food, the environment, beautiful bathrooms, beautiful showers, one of the most beautiful environments, and it's all a gift. Mm-hmm. And then afterwards, we can donate, if we choose to, which we do. Mm-hmm. Some of us that can't afford it yes. do. But other people don't ever have to. So tell us about how you came about creating this.
Okay, so the story, in my early 30s, I think, is actually when I moved to Oregon, I was having some existential angst. You know, well, what is this all about? What's my meaning? What's my purpose? Life, right? And so I started a search for truth, and started looking everywhere I could, going to every seminar and reading every book and trying to find answers. And what I found was that in all of these traditions and all of these techniques and all of it, there seemed to be one common thread, which was meditation. Some kind of contemplation, some kind of prayer, some kind of meditation, some kind of inward work. So, and I was always really attracted to that. It really, for some reason, that's just the one aspect of any of the practices that I did or traditions that I tried. I always went to the meditation piece. And in 2001, I found out, somebody told me, there's this place you can go to go do a 10-day meditation course. And you sit in silence for 10 days and you meditate 11 hours a day. And I go, that sounds really good. How much does it cost? And they said, well, it's free. I said, well, that's interesting. And even though I had the money to pay for that, something about that really appealed to me. There's some purity in how that was done that really caught me. And so I went and I did that 10-day course. And I found it completely transformational. Particular style of meditation that I learned at that course is called Vipassana, which is actually a very, very simple meditation technique that is profound.
And it's Vipassana.
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 Yeah. Vipassana. And that's how I came up with Kepassana. You know, what do you get when you give Vipassana to a Mexican? You get Kepassana. So it was the name of it was originally just something funny. It turns out it's really quite right
powerful.
On point. You know, Kepassana is what's happening.
Yes.
It's about right now. So, I started going every year. Every year I would take 10 days out of my busy schedule. I was raising a family. I was doing community service work, coaching the soccer team, building a business, you know, all of it. It was that time in your life where you're just going. But I always made sure that I took time out once a year and went and sat in silence for 10 days and really examined myself and started gaining more clarity and more peace and more ease of being through all of that. My business started becoming more successful. My family life became better. Everything in my life just started improving because of the simple work that I was doing. And I did keep a somewhat regular practice of meditation in between these courses. So fast forward to 2011, I was here in Maui. And it was time to go do my next 10-day course. And I didn't want to leave Maui. I was pretty happy here. So I decided to gather a bunch of friends who I knew had done these courses and just do kind of our own. So I said, okay, well, if we're going to do this, let's bring in some yoga teachers, because you're not allowed to do yoga in these 10-day meditation courses. Let's bring a raw food chef in. Let's bring in some body workers. Let's play some beautiful music. Let's do it in a way that we're true to the practice, but we're as nurturing as we can be. And at the end of those 10 days, I just knew. I just knew. I said, this is my life's work. this is what I'm going to dedicate myself to. I had no idea which way it was going to go or how it was going to happen, but I just knew, this is it. And everything else in my life from here on out is to support that. My children were grown, they were out of the house, they were living their own lives. It was time for me to sort of figure out what my next thing was. And I always thought, well, at some point I'll sell my business, spend some quiet time, and then figure out what to do next. Well, it came to me well before. So while still running my business and doing all these other things, I started doing these meditation courses in my house and inviting people to come over and sit with me. And little by little, it led to me adding to my house, adding a dome to my house where we could do the meditation sessions and adding different
rooms. And this was in Ashland?
This was in Oregon, yeah.
Yes.
And then I bought a property here in Maui in the jungle where I could host about 15 people at once and started doing courses every month. And it just started evolving and growing. The key to it was that it has to remain free. It has to be given in service. It has to be given in and received in humility by those who receive it. And we only accept donations for people who have actually completed a course. So that it can be done in purity. And the donation is not an exchange for what you receive. The donation is so that you can, so somebody else can have that experience.
Pay it forward.
Paying it forward, essentially, yeah. So, and the other piece of that, which is really important, is volunteerism. Once people have sat a course, they can come back to future courses and sit and serve. So, like when we do courses here in this property that you were mentioning, we host 55 people. But 20 of those people are here to serve.
Yes.
Just take care of the other 35 that are here. All the meals are prepared by volunteers. All the body work's done by volunteers. The management of the course, the setup, everything. Everything is done in service, in giving, in kindness. And everything is received that way. And it increases gratitude. And so,
yes.
So that's really what's happening now. That's kind of the story and how it all plays out. The courses themselves, you know, we can go into what happens and how we do it and what it means and how it helps people, whichever way you want to go.
Well, I just wanted to, it's just the structure of it. You have a foundation then. This is separate than your technology business. Mm-hmm. Allows you to be able to give this to the community.
Yes.
And then you do it through a foundation. I mean,
yeah.
There's going to be quite a few people watching this that are very successful,
yeah.
That may have a desire that is completely different than having a retreat.
Right.
But maybe they do want to be of service and give part of their fortune and do things. So did you research on how to do a nonprofit, a foundation? Mm-hmm. Can you just give some guidance to those that want to do this?
Yeah, well, I hired an attorney who specializes in nonprofits and foundations and so on. And he helped me set up a 501c3, which allowed me to donate my money on a tax-free basis, which essentially got me almost $2 for every dollar I was donating. And then, of course, it allows other people to donate into the foundation on a tax-free basis. Although I think the tax laws have changed recently, so I'm not exactly sure. Think at the bottom level how that works, but so it was creating a nonprofit foundation and having a board and have a structure for this to not only happen now but carry on beyond me. And the properties that are involved in this, so they're currently owned by me and my business, just because there's mortgages in them. Once the ownership is free and clear, then they'll be donated to the foundation. And for example, this place here, as long as I have anything to say about it, will be a monument to world peace.
Yes.
That's what this place was meant to be used for, and it will continue to be used for that.
And the people that work on your technology business, do they come and do some of these courses?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
They get behind you. They mm-hmm. know what you do and support you going for weeks at a time. And so...
Well, yeah. Well, first of all, yeah, they know that I'm basically on to other things.
Okay.
And that they're running the business themselves. But they know that there are certain things where I still have, you know, where I still call the
yes.
shots and decisions that I make. And I have my weekly check-ins with my executives and I have executive team meetings. And I do visit the office regularly as well. I stay involved. But basically, the running of the business is up to them. And do they support this? Yeah, absolutely. We've had as many as 120 employees, and about 45 of them have come to do courses. Some of them have come to multiple courses. One of them just did a 30-day course. And so these people not only are getting this for free, they're getting paid to be here.
I want to work for you.
So, yeah.
Yeah, that, I mean, for me, I think that's a little bit, you're solving the problem right now for some of the people watching, because they don't know how to do it. They, some of them really want to start breaking away and be of service. So can you share with our audience, what is being of service to you mean? What is that?
Giving something of value, of meaning to me, something that is really valuable and meaningful to me that I know is going to help others, and giving it without any expectation of anything in return whatsoever. Pure service.
Yes. And when you have your business hat, though, and people, like, for instance, you were talking about that lab that you are, you know, supporting here on Maui, then you put on your business hat, right? Then everything, all the figures need to be there, the business plan, the vision. Tell us a little bit about that, because that's what I love about you. I feel like you, we're very similar in that respect, because we really have a tremendous connection to the Great Spirit, and we know that there's something much greater that's running this. But at the same time, when we put on our business hat, there's a whole other aspects of ourselves. Can you just share a little bit about what you do and how you integrate the two?
Yeah, I feel like in a sense I'm kind of straddling two different worlds right now, but they're bleeding into each other. Obviously. And one world is the world of Kipassana, where it's just really more an exercise in surrender, an exercise in allowing things to evolve the way they will, and making sure that everybody who's participating and being a part of it is because that is their highest dream, that is their highest goal. That's how they're so fulfilled by serving that way. And everybody who participates in this feels that way and can only be that way. And allowing it to just gracefully unfold on its own. That's been a beautiful experiment because it's just evolving so beautifully. And it's working so well. And the people that are showing up and the help and the support that I'm getting to make this happen is just beyond what I could have ever imagined. So there's that side. The business side. And by the way, on the side of Kipassana, we're not prospecting. We're not trying to reach people. We're not trying to go out and recruit. We're not trying to convince anyone of anything. We're not trying to keep anyone. We're just giving a gift freely and letting it be. And that's a beautiful thing. And it's working. And more donations are coming in, and more people are showing up. And it will eventually and become its own self-sustaining organism.
Yes.
It will continue to evolve that way with or without me. On the business side, yeah, of course, you got to make your numbers, you have to make payroll, you have to, you know, you have to take care of customers, you have to live up to your obligations and your agreements and your contracts. And yes, there's quarterly numbers that need to be met, and sales goals that need to be, targets that need to be met, and you know, taxes that need to be paid. All those things need to be done just like any regular business. And it's kind of fun for me to play in this world and then go play in that world. And by the way, start to integrate the two. Like at Plexus, for example, we have a meditation room. And a lot of my employees who have come through these meditation courses not only go and sit regularly and have times where they do meditations, but they bring in other people. We have yoga classes that are taught at the office as well. And so the two are sort of more and more bleeding into each other, but they do at the moment for me require two sort of different hats that I have to put on. Yeah.
Fantastic. And so before we complete this beautiful sharing, can you tell us a little bit about the you part, the part about what is it for you that you love so much about the Kipassana work? Why you? People might think that it's really self-centered, and that, like, for instance, I meditate. I've been meditating for now nearly 10 years, twice a day. I've been practicing transcendental meditation. And when I came to do the 10-day course with you, it was really easy for me to continue with my practice. And at the same time, I was also doing the practices that you were teaching us, mm-hmm. and doing all the things, and had uh-huh. the most magnificent time. My beloved and I shared it together. And of course, mm-hmm. we're completely in separate areas and all that. And so I so love it. I know what he has brought for me. Mm-hmm. Can you share with the audience, what was it about it that even in your 30s, you began to be a seeker and began to delve more and more into it? Why?
Well, like I said, it started with existential angst. It started with seeking truth, started with seeking peace, to find a way to make meaning of it all, to find happiness and peace and wellness in my life. I felt like I was going down some roads that didn't feel so right in terms of my health, in terms of just even my peace of mind, my perspective. I was looking for answers. It turns out they were all inside. I already had them. I just needed to stop and listen. So that's what, you know, initially led me to it. And now it's just become this process of personal evolution and unfoldment and discovering new realities that are around me all the time that I couldn't see before because I'm tapping in more into myself. So, you know, you're asking about my particular journey. I guide every one of these sessions, every one of these courses that we do, I guide them. I'm there from 4:30 in the morning till 9:30 at night and guide every single session. And I could hire teachers, I could bring in other people, and I will, and I'm starting to when the time is right. But right now, it has to be me, and it has to be me because, first of all, it's my vision, and I'm creating it, and it's the early phases, and I want it to be just the way I've envisioned
yes.
it. And to unfold in a way that completely makes sense to me, but also it puts me up front, makes me sit there and be a lot more present. You know, if I'm the one sitting there with 55 yes. people relying on me and to take them into their most tender places, into their, sometimes their dark places, sometimes their light, all of it, and guide them through an easy journey into themselves, I need to really show up. So that's my practice.
And yes.
it enhances my practice, and you know that's part of the reason I do it.
Yes, and I want to make it very clear, there is nothing about Jorge that he acts like a guru. Okay. So this is really fascinating because people, I just want to make it really clear for people that you are so authentic and so genuine, and just the way that you share through the whole week, and you are a very natural human being, just guiding people on something that you really found.
Yeah.
And that's what's so moving, that you're willing to share your wealth and share, you know, the things that you've been able to attain in life mm-hmm. and then to guide people. And why do you think it's so important for each person to tap into themselves? How does that help the world?
Oh, my goodness. I can't think of a better way to help the world. Let me start with, I think the way I look at it is we're all on the same team, all of us. Okay. And at the core, we all want the same thing. We all want love. We all want happiness. We all want connection. We all want safety. We all want the same things. And somehow we've lost track of that. We've lost sense of the fact that we are really together in this, and that we all want the same thing. What happens when you tap deeply into your own essence, the essence of who you are, not all the personality stuff, not all these things that you're hearing out here, not everything on the waves, you start recognizing and seeing and experiencing directly the interconnectedness of all of us. You may not dwell in that all the time, but now you experience it. Now you know it's there. And now you start coming at life more from that place. And also, it's also very humbling. This practice is very humbling. It's a very simple practice, but it keeps you humble, and humility is key, and it's a key aspect of this. And it makes you want to be of service to others. So, I think we've unlocked the code. I think I found the key to get us there. And, you know, I started out in my career doing computer programming. And one of the things I used to love to do when I was programming is, how do I get to the result with the least number of lines of code possible? Mm-hmm. How can I write the simplest code to get to the answer? And what I found out through this practice is that I found the least number of lines of code to get to the answer for human beings.
Wow.
And it really, this whole thing that we do here is so simple.
It is.
It's not easy. It's not easy because of its simplicity. We keep wanting to complicate it. But it's through this very simple thing, we can just really get to know ourselves. At the core, we're all love. In our essence, we are love. And if you tap into that, now you're living from love. Now you're giving from love. Now you're treating people from that perspective. And you just start behaving differently in life. And everything gets better. So yes. That's why.
Well, thank you so much, Jorge. Yeah. Is there anything you'd like to say to the audience? You know, we are reaching people around the world. There will be quite a few people in Asia.
Yeah.
And we will have this translated into Chinese.
Ah.
And then maybe a lo mejor en español,
uh-huh.
You know,
do it
wonderful. For our fellow Latinos. But is there anything that you would like to share and you can speak into the camera to the audience that you may want to share with them?
Well, first I want to address something that you said earlier about the guru thing. In this practice, we're all the gurus. We're our own gurus. There is no one that can do this work for you. You have to do it yourself.
Right.
You have to walk through it and do it yourself. And it's not so much about the complexity of the practice. It's the depth of experience that you have in it, depth of experience that you have into going internally. And I think I pretty much summed it up earlier. I mean, this, as far as I've been able to find in this lifetime, this is the most direct path to truth I've been able to find. There may be others, and I'm sure there are, but this is the one, and this is the one that I think has taken me there, and has taken, I've run nearly 2,000 people through this program by now, and it's taken many people to a higher level of awareness, a higher level of consciousness, a higher state of being, a way of navigating life with more peace, more ease, a calm abiding regardless of external circumstances. So, and I've made that my mission in life now to do that and creating a successful business to begin with. I did it for the money. I did it for the freedom, you know, and then I went and I sought these practices to find peace of mind. And now I can combine the two, the peace of mind that I found and the answers that I got with the financial means that I've been able to establish. And put it all into service, put it all into doing good, put it all into helping people. We need it. Right now is the time. And if you have the means and you have the ability and you have skills that you can share and give, dedicate your life to that. And the rewards are beyond what you could imagine. Beyond. I feel so blessed in every way because of this work that I'm doing. The support that I'm getting from so many beautiful people such as yourself in doing this is beyond what I could have expected. And I'm just really excited to keep going and see where this thing goes.
So thank you so much. Yeah. And as I was listening to you, there's one thing that I always like to share with people, which is that once you make a decision to be of service, there's all of these things that begin to occur. Now, I love the quick story that you have about how you ended up buying this property. Because this is truly one of the most beautiful. How many acres is it?
It's only 3 acres here, but it's oceanfront in Maui on a marine sanctuary and the most beautiful spot on the entire island.
Yes, it really is. And so when you make a decision, okay, so this is just the quick story on how you used to canoe in front of it.
Yes,
you know, because this is how things begin to evolve. All of a sudden you make a decision that you want to do something, and then what happened?
So it was about 20 years ago or so, I used to kayak past here every day with my friends, my family. And I'd go by and I'd look at this place and I'd see these trees and I'd see the gazebo and the lawn. And I'd go, who gets to live there? I want to live there sometime. And I'd go past my family and I'd point at the place and say, look at that place. And just completely forgot about it. And it was about 2.5 years ago, I was talking to a friend and I was saying, I saw this place was for sale and it was for more money than I could have afforded at the time. And I said, boy, in a world of infinite possibilities, that would be the best place ever. 2 hours later, I get a call from another friend who's a realtor. He says, you got to go see this place. Well, yeah, I know, but it's not, I don't think it'll work out. So he convinced me to come and see it. And I stepped through that gate and I was immediately in tears. I just knew something. I didn't know. Something had just hit me. I didn't know what. And we made an offer that night. It was fully accepted. The next morning we went into escrow. 2 weeks later we closed, which is unheard of for a property this complex in yes. Maui and all the things you have yes. to go through. It just happened.
Yes.
And I reflected and said, I remember I used to point at this place. That's where it all started.
Yes.
And then when I had the vision and the need and the desire to use this place for something that's so beneficial for yes. everyone, that's when it was delivered to me. Yes. So beautifully, so gracefully, so easily.
And Joe and my beloved Chris and other people, this is a very famous property on Maui. If you've been here for at least 10 years, you know about this property. It's there's so much history and stories and the parties and people coming here to, you know, live the last few months of their lives. There's so much history. And Joe is a good friend and he's so happy. He's so happy that the property that, you know, he's moved on to do other things, that his beautiful property that he had for so long. Mm-hmm. is being used for such a good thing.
Yeah.
So it's a history. It's a story that is so beautiful. And the last thing is, I know people were always interested. Can you share a little bit about your beautiful necklace? Because I know it was handmade, right?
Yeah, it was. These are all what they call puka shells, the little shells with little holes in them, that were all gathered here in McKenna by a friend. And he sat on the beach and made this necklace. And I just basically wherever I go, I always take McKenna with me wherever I go.
It must be interesting in meetings in the heart of San Francisco.
Yeah, well, in the heart of San Francisco is not a problem because they're all weird there. So like me, but you know, you go to New York City, you go to Boston, that might be a different thing. No, you know, I've also now gotten to the point in my career and in my professional development where I can show up in a t-shirt and puka shells and be completely myself and nobody takes issue with it. I don't ever wear ties anymore. Yes. Yeah.
And so the last thing is for new technologies, you know, our mentor and teacher, Buckminster Fuller, and, you know, who passed on in 1983, he used to say that good technology was going to solve world problems. Mm-hmm. He used to say, you can count on it. You know, the good technology is going to do good things.
Yes.
So that you meditating is a type of technology, right?
Well, the meditation that I do is very scientific, very precise.
Yes.
And it is a technology. It's a technology of the human mind.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so what else do you see that is coming up in the world of technology? Because we will be having people that are very interested in that will be watching this. What do you see? I mean, for instance, in my universe, for me, blockchain is really going to transform the world.
Yeah.
The technology of blockchain, and it's here to stay. And there's many people using it for nearly 10 years now, besides what people know it as with. It's so different than anything around Bitcoin.
Yeah.
The technology behind Bitcoin is actually being used in many industries.
In many industries.
Is there any other technological advances that you see that you can share
finish up? So many, and so many people working on so many beautiful things that help. But really at the core of it, everything we think of as a problem in the world has one root cause, one single root cause, and that's human consciousness or lack thereof, human awareness or lack thereof. So you go to the center point and you apply pressure there, you fix that and everything else will get taken care of, and the technologies will evolve and the visions and the innovations will come so much more freely, and they'll all be directed towards the unity of the human race. So that, to me, that is the ultimate, the one thing that I'm focusing on, that I think you apply pressure there and everything else gets fixed. So
thank you. Muchas gracias. Thank you. And we look forward to seeing you with us in one of our accelerated programs, of course, the Global Accelerated Business School. And we really look forward. There's so many of the graduates that will be coming back, and you'll have an opportunity to meet these beautiful global entrepreneurs and conscious, very conscious and aware, that really are very much like you. So
wonderful.
Thank you for everything that you do, and thank you.
Thank you.
Aloha, everyone.